Accession number 14975, William Rochester, Reel 3.
Mr. Rochester, Reel 3. You've mentioned the equipment that you got, Mr. Rochester, near the end of your training, but we may as well deal with it now. What did they issue you with then?
Well, we had rifles given, but they belonged to the depot. I don't think they were much good as a rifle. They looked like they were, and they had everything like a rifle. But whether they would fire a bullet or not, I couldn't tell you. Or whether they would hit anything with it, I don't know. But you use that for carrying it around doing your rifle drill in your march. And you use it for lying on the ground and aiming and shooting. But you never find anything with it.
Mr. Rogerson, real.
The only shooting we did was on the range in the barracks, the 2.2 rifles, which were the same as the 303 with the 2.2 barrel. Inside, you got used to shooting at the targets with them, but your other rifles were basically for drill, for carrying around and doing your drill.
And you'd be responsible for them,
yes,
and
each
to keep
one
them clean.
Each one had its own, yes.
How did you clean them? What had you to do to clean them?
Well, you had some 4x2,
which is
a piece of flannel, a cream coloured flannel with a red line down. That was the 4 inches by 2 inches. 4 inches that way by 2 inches that way, and you got a certain amount of that. You took as much as you could, like, because it was handy stuff. Then you had to clean the barrel. The barrel was a piece of cord with a metal on the end, and you dropped it through the barrel, and your 4x2 was fastened on the end, and you pulled it through. I used to have 2 pieces of cord that I found another one I thought was better, and I would fix the barrel up, the rifle itself up, with my feet, and somewhere up here. I can't remember what I did with it now, but I used to get instead of just pulling it through, I would pull it through and pull it back again, so you could give the seesaw. And I think there was 2 of us did it at the time, because I could hold one end, but I couldn't hold the other end. And he asked what I was doing. I said, well, you get doubly clean this way. It don't take you half the time. So we both used to share each other, pulling it backwards and forwards, you know. Then pull it right out to have a look. And that you kept.
Did you have anything on your 4x2?
Oil. A little bit of oil. Not too much, a little bit of oil, which kept the inside clean. And you oiled all your metal parts on it, took your magazine off and your bolt out, and cleaned that and kept that clean. No grit of anything in there, and kept that slightly oiled, not a lot of oil, otherwise the oil came on your clothes. You had to be very careful, you kept the oil off the woodwork, and it wasn't running on the other one, it was just a dry. You cleaned it off with a piece of cloth, took as much off as you could with it, as long as it was had a slight touch on to stop any dampness getting on it, anything at all.
Where did you keep your pull through and your oil bottle?
In your cupboard. Mm-hmm. In your cupboard. And you kept your cupboard shut. If it was open, it was open doors.
And your weapon would be inspected regularly?
Oh, yes.
How was that done?
Well, quite often, he would give you the squad, the sergeant would give you for the inspection of rifles, where he just stood and he held them forward, and you took the bolt, pulled the bolt open, and he could look through it. If you couldn't see properly, you'd have to take the bolt out, you know, pull it back and lift the top off, pull the bolt out, so he'd get a good look through. If he wasn't satisfied, he would take it off you and have a good look through yourself. If he was doing that, what have I missed? You know, he knew there was something wrong. If he wasn't satisfied looking down, there was something you'd done wrong, or you hadn't done at all. You know, but that way. And then they would have, I think it was once a month, they had an inspection in your hands, and you took everything off, showed him, and he wanted to see the magazine. He pressed the magazine in and say, what's that like? He'd have a piece of 4x2 on his finger. Press it in on the magazine, or press the magazine down. Nothing in, and see what come out on it. Too much oil in there, son. Yeah, there always had to be something wrong, you know. Otherwise, it was a waste of time even looking.
But they would really insist upon the cleanliness,
yes,
of your weapon.
Yes,
it's always an important aspect.
Yes, that was, it was very important, because as a defence thing, that was the only thing you had, if it was necessary to use it. That's the only thing you had, that and the bayonet. And therefore, you had to look after it like a brother and keep it clean.
Were you issued with bayonets at the early stage?
No, not there. Not at the depot.
So in addition to your weapon, what other elements? Oh, you just said a belt. There was nothing else.
Just had your white belt and then the rifles. I think mine... never mind, it's something else. I'll tell you when that's off. Right. We got our full equipment at the depot at Newcastle. Kattrick, when we went to Kattrick. And our squad, there were only 32 of us, and the AIN squad, which followed us by a month. We went to Kattrick, the first one. We were the first ones in Kattrick camp. And our job was to clean the camp up as much as we could, because the first battalion were in Cairo, and they were coming home. So we had to do what we could. 32 of us would do what we could to get the place tidied up, the barrack rooms, as many barrack rooms as we could, because it was empty, sorted out, and that, for them coming. And then the other squad joined us, so that was 64 of us, going down with the two sergeants, two corporals, two lance corporals, going down the place, sorting out. And we got them tidied up, and we had to finish up by getting the blankets from the quartermaster store to put them on the beds, just a couple of days before they were due to come, you know. And we finished up. The roadway had little lumps of bloody stone down, you know. We finished up whitewashing them.
Before we go to Kattrick, of course, so your training would start in earnest after about 2 or 3 weeks when you got your squad together and your uniforms. Yeah. Is it possible for you to take me through a typical training day at the depot from Reveille?
Not really, the kinds of things you might have been doing.
Well, for example,
I can't remember much what we did. What I did as a recruit, I can tell you what the squads did later as a lance corporal and a corporal and a sergeant at the depot.
Well, that would be basically the same anyway.
Basically, yeah. But
so after Reveille, you
if I can remember rightly, we didn't have any equipment, webbing. If I remember right, we didn't have any weapon, and we had this rifle for arms drill. That was all. We did aiming and that, and the shooting, we went in the drill off, in the rifle range, to do the shooting and given orders, receiving orders from the corporal to hit the target, and he would move it somewhere else, you know, and he'd have a target with different things on, and he'd give you an order to hit that particular one rather than just the black ring and the rings around it. You're learning then to take instructions in firing at targets. They did that in the miniature range when we were recruits. But we didn't do that when I was back as a corporal and lance corporal. You had the target, you either hit the target or not. And I think they got equipment at the depot in those days, 2 or 3 years afterwards, you know. I think they got it there. I think that's right. But normally as recruits, we did our physical training in the morning. Then we went and had breakfast. And
what would you get for breakfast?
Kippers. Toast, sometimes. One slice of toast. We'd have kippers. Porridge, of course. You had porridge every time. And then cheese. Bread and cheese. And that was your breakfast. I mean, two slices of bread.
What time would you have breakfast?
7:45, somewhere around about there.
So after breakfast, you would go into your drills?
Yeah, after breakfast, you went in straight back into the barrack room and got yourself changed. If you were lucky, and quick enough, you could have a shower, because you'd been doing physical training and you wanted a shower because you were wet. And it wasn't very good to just go and rub yourself down with your towel and put some clothes on the top, because you never got yourself dry properly. You know, you were cold until you started sweating again. So what we used to try to do, a gang of us, was straight down and straight into the towels, shower before we went for breakfast, and get a dry off, and let it dry off while we're not breakfast. You know, and it worked. And then you're back in the barrack room, You had to have your barracroom fatigues done before you went out. Then you did your PT. Then you got your breakfast. Then you had about 15 minutes sometimes to get dressed and on the square. And somebody yelling, "Sound there, you're late, you're late. Get yourselves outside, you're late, you're late." Well, you weren't, you know, but it was yelling for you to get out on the square. You did drill.
Can we examine drill in its progress?
Mm-hmm.
What were the initial steps or whatever?
Marching. Purely simply marching and turning about. You did an awful lot of that to get them on your right foot to turn round. So you get everybody, and the corporal was very good. He was demonstrating nearly every day. And look, you're marching along, I'll say, squad, about turn, and he'll have his foot down. You say, "Now I'm stopped there." But you don't stop there. You bring the other foot up and you bounce it down, then you turn that one, then you turn that one, and then the next one you're off. And he would demonstrate and show us on the square how to do it. And eventually you get it.
But some men have great difficulty knowing what their left from their
true.
Right.
True. I only had one, experienced one, who could not swing his right arm with his left foot. We did them both together. So you have to stick in with the back row. And when the monthly test was on, the examination, he was left off. He was sick. Because he used to keep us back. You were pushed back a month. Yeah, a month in your train. That meant another month's training you had before you went away anywhere. And, he couldn't help it. So I think the sergeant, as a matter of fact, got permission to shift him. And I think finally he was moved somewhere. Whether he went out the army or not, I don't know. But he just could not do it. It automatically. We used to hold his arm and push it for him, but never went. If you pushed his arm, his foot went. You know, you think he was fastened up inside.
In your marching drill, did you go immediately into the light infantry pace, or was that gradual?
No, that was gradual. We were told that is the pace. They would play a record, not a record. I played a record first. That's all we had those days, records. He played a record, and he said, "This will be the pace that you normally march at, but to get everything ready, we're going to march at ordinary pace time. Slower than that, and we'll build up to it to get the right ones right, to get the right time. But we must do the movement of your feet slowly first." And we would do it from standing still, turning round like that, and turning about square. Then he said, "Now we're going to turn to the left. We're in threes, and I'll give you an order like that, and stop your foot. You see, when it'll come out on that foot, then you turn that one there, turn that one, and put that one, then step off of there. So you turn to the left, and you all do that together." And you'd have a doing done together. You'd say, "Stop now, right foot. You haven't got that one turned round far enough. Get your foot a bit further round." They were very good. Mine, they were never like that when I was back at the depot years afterwards. They were never like that, but they were very good, those two corporals we had. I wish I could remember them. But
so from marching drill, mm-hmm. What would be the next stage?
Well, you built up in about 3 or 4 weeks to your regimental pace. Once they got that going, they were all for it, because just at the other end of the square, the Northumberland Fusiliers were going like that, and all they wanted to do that and catch them up, you know. Then you did your rifle drill. You carried your rifle at the trail, then you had to move it when you were turning round, you know, lift it up. You couldn't turn it round that way because you were smacking him on the leg, which happened quite a few times. When you stop, you put your foot down, your stopping foot, as we called it, your rifle came up. Then you turned round there, then it went, once you stepped off, it went down again. And then we were, having done your rifle drill for your shoulder, get your rifle onto your shoulder, you carried it in your left. Well, you could swing round anywhere with that. Then eventually your arm got tired, so you moved it over. And he would shout, "Change arms." And you do it on the same feet as you're doing, stop. You hit it on the same foot as you turn to the left. And that, you see, whatever you do, you're turning. They would say, "Change arms." And that was a step to put your arm on. And then you got away again. which I think was very good, because you use the same leg all the time for turning, for the stop business, for when you turned about, when you turned the left, when you turned the right. Except, well, when you turned the right, you it was on the other leg. You know, you put that one down first, then catch you came round. But it was your stop leg where you did any movements on it. Then they used to have us on passing the rifle from when she kept lifted it up to pass it across to this arm and put it down. And lift it up and pass it across to this one and put it down. Why they did that, I'm damned if I know, because you never carried it in your left hand. You occasionally did if you're on a rope march and some silly sod had you carrying it down here and set it on your shoulder or over your shoulder, you know. Yes, when I took my blokes out with rifles, I made sure they had the proper belts on and long enough to put them on the shoulders. So as soon as we got out to the barrack site, they all back put it on the shoulders. Because I think it's awful carrying it. It's tiring carrying it, or even on your shoulder. So we slung it on their arms and we're all right.
Were drills learned by numbers?
Yes.
And the pace of those numbers would be
same moving
told
pace,
to you.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You had your shouting, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. You all had, everybody shouted it, you know. You did it.
Presumably that would take up most of your morning.
It took a good bit of the morning. Drilling.
Did you have a break in the morning between breakfast and lunch? Did you have a short break? Where you got a cup of something or?
No, I can't remember that at all. No, I can't.
So, afternoon, after lunch, what might you get for lunch?
There must have been a break, because it was from 8 o'clock till 12. There must have been a break. But I can't remember it offhand, you know. Because the canteen was there, and I remember them going in the canteen, so it must have been an official break, otherwise they wouldn't be in the canteen. Yeah. And they used to get them penny Duncans, Tuckney Duncan bars for a penny, a cup of tea. A meal, well, here you had a meat and vegetables, like we have anywhere else. And I thought the food was quite canny, you know, it didn't fill you, you're almost hungry afterwards. But that was good for you, so tell me.
What time would the dinner time be, or lunch time?
12. Mm-hmm.
Then after that, you'd have your afternoon sessions. What might you be doing there?
Well, more or less similar to what you've been doing in the morning. At the depot, there's not much difference. As you progressed in the depot, you went outside the barracks for a route march, for a march round, you know, onto the Maidam, round the Maidam, up Newcastle. You went straight up the barrack road, over the top, and round the far side to Gord's Gotha, round the Maidam, actually.
How far would this be?
3 miles, maybe a little bit more.
Pretty heavy on your feet for, you know, coming in new. Did you have feet problems?
No.
Were they inspected after every day or at the end
of
the day?
Just if you were on a proper route march, and if anyone got a blister or anything like that, it was treated then and sent back. But I don't think we had much problems with the feet. You're on the square all day with your heavy boots on. You know, you have them on all day, whether you're on the square or in the barracks. It's the marching, the movement, continued, same thing that gives you the blister. Not the fact that the boots are heavy or anything at all. Because if you have them all day, you're not doing the same thing all the time. Well, if you're on a route march for 26 mile or 20 mile, for 20 miles, for about 5 hours, you're doing exactly the same thing all the time, and that's where the rubbing comes in and catches you. Catches you back of your heel on the ends of your toes on the top.
The afternoon presumably finished with a tea of some kind.
4 o'clock, and we had tea, which was very much, again, it was bread. And I remember kippers, or spice bread. Do you know, we got a kipper once and a piece of spice bread. And the first time we got spice bread was 2 slices of bread and butter. I forgot about that. They were buttered this time. Then we got a piece of spice cake, Naffy spice cake. And I thought, what do we do with this? Spice cake and bread. And one lad next to me said, I'll show you what you do with it, Bill, and you'll like it. He said, you just do that, put there, and make a sandwich. And you know, I love a spice sandwich, even now. When we have the Christmas cake, I make a few fruit cakes myself. We call them Christmas cake, but I make fruit cakes through the year sometimes, you know, just get cracking and make one. And I love a spicy sandwich. Nice thick, thin bread, thick sandwich, get it on. And that was it, that was your afternoon tea.
And that would finish about what time?
Well, anywhere between 4 o'clock and 4:30, you would go in the dining room for that. And the sooner you got out of there, the better. Because the lads that were in charge wanted to go home. There was about half a dozen ex-DLI blokes, you know.
How did you spend your evenings then, after tea?
Well, you could go into the Naffy and have a cup of tea in the Naffy, or sit and chat in there. Or you could sit in your barrack room, polish your boots. Or you can take your rifle down, give that a bit of clean. Or you can refold something that was in your cupboard, anything you like. But there wasn't a lot to do.
You kept busy in that
it
way.
It was up to yourself to do that. You either sit and read a book, or lay on your bed and read a book, or get the form round the fire, sit round the fire, and quite some of them used to get round in the winter, get round there, later on when I was there, get round there and sing carols, or sing songs. Somebody would start a song off and say, hey, well, didn't that, I'll get you copies. And they were sitting right, handwriting on pieces of paper, the words, and maybe a dozen of them would sit round there and sing. They'd never seen it before, and they would sit there and sing songs round the fire. You had a big roaring fire in the metal fireplace there.
You weren't allowed out, you said, until you got your uniforms, and then, of course, you had the girl problem going right down the road.
Yeah.
Did you get any longer leaves? Were you allowed any longer stays from the camp?
You could ask for a weekend. You could get a weekend after you'd been there a couple of months, with you got your uniform and you were past uniform. Every time you went over the barracks, you were inspected.
I was going to ask you about that, yes. How strict was that?
Very strict. Very strict. There was always a barrack guard on with a sergeant in charge, and the guardsman, the fellow that was on duty, the sentry, if he wasn't sure himself, you had to stop and face him, and he turned you around and had a good look. And if he wasn't happy with you, he called the sergeant out. And the sergeant either said, oh, that's all right, off you go, or back and get that done. And quite a lot was sent back if they weren't tidy enough to go out. The trousers weren't creased properly. They had the hat on the wrong way. You say, go back to your barracks and look in the mirror. No, you wouldn't let them look in the mirror there. They go back to the barracks and look in the mirror. Put your hat on straight. You haven't got your hat on. They were very strict.
How did you keep creases in your trousers?
Put them on the bed and lie on them.
No irons, anything of that nature?
No. Wet them. You used to wet, get a mouthful of water and run through your mouth and get all the hairs, pick all the hairs off afterwards, off the khaki trousers. Wet your trousers down the creases, put them on your bed. And that did the trick.
So occasionally you got your weekend presumably you'd go home?
You could get a weekend to go home, yes.
Did you go?
Yes, I had one.
How did your family think of you in uniform in the army?
They laughed at me. I thought it was wicked going and walking around like that. I hated it. I did. I very seldom went out in my uniform. I didn't like them at all.
Was this common at the time that the civilians didn't ridicule soldiers or didn't take to them?
No, they didn't take any notice of you, really. I found that out later on. They didn't take any notice of it. But it's yourself. I didn't like the look of it. I'd seen people before wandering around with this uniform on, and I thought, oh, I don't like that at all. But if I wanted to go home, I had to put it on to go home. Until later on, when I could wear civilians. Yeah. But that was afterwards, because I went back to the depot as a lance corporal, and then I went back again as a corporal. The depot and as a sergeant.
You mentioned earlier on the tape that you had to go to school in the depot. What were you doing there?
To get your certificate, your third class certificate of education, which was remembering all the battle honours I got and a few other names and things like that. And I think a little bit of maths, and you wrote a letter or something. That's all I can remember doing there as a recruit. You got your third class certificate of education. And then I think that's about all you had time for the depot. There, while you were there.
So they built up this regimental pride by talking about the traditions, teaching the traditions and events that the regiment had been in.
And the battle honours, you had to quote the battle honours. The local, you know, the recent ones, Spain ones and Russia and that, you know. They never mentioned the other side of the world, where they got the word faithful from. That was never mentioned at all. I dug that up when I was a school teacher and told them about that, called them faithful. I was back there as a sergeant. I went to, I was on an education course in Shorncliffe, and I went finished at the depot as a school instructor. Then I went from the school under the square, and if the school teacher was off, I had to go back and teach one, and then come back on the square again. You know. But they didn't do much at the depot at the time. You had as a schoolmaster, you had a lot of writing to do to hand to them. Well, I found a simple thing, and I've never found it since. I had a tin and a lemon jelly, and I melted the lemon jelly and poured it into the tin and put something else, a couple of drops of something else in with it to go, make it go. And when it hardened, you used to write or print with Indian ink on a piece of paper, put it on there and rub it on, and it printed it for you. Now, I can never find the second thing. I've tried always, but... And then they used to hand them out to the lad, the name of the battle honours and that, so they could remember them, you know, and what they had to do.
Was there great rivalry between the various squads in the depot?
Yes, if they could, yeah. The biggest rivalry was going to the church parade on a Thursday. Around the back of the barracks there was a chapel or a church down, I can't remember the street, the same as the road that runs down that way. Towards the centre of the town, and the fusiliers used to start before us. They gave them about 6 or 7 minutes start, and you couldn't keep our lads back. They were all right in the barracks, regimental march in the barracks, but once they got out there, they were damn near doubling. Their main idea was to pass the fusiliers. You know, you couldn't do that. When they got too close, they used to halt them, say 5 minutes break. Oh, we nearly got them, Sergeant.
Did the rivalry mean that, in effect, you were trying to be smarter and better at your drill than the next squad?
Well, I suppose it really did, but it didn't strike me as much at the time. It just thought, well, they just want to beat them. I thought that's all. I suppose it would be that they wanted to be better than them, and they thought they were better than them, and they wanted to show they were better than them. But at the time, it just struck me as that we wanted to just pass them. That's all it entered my mind, anyhow, that they're marching slow, we're marching fast, we can catch them up and pass them and beat them. That was it.
Between your own squads, was there a kind of a rivalry to be the best squad passing out?
Oh, yes. It was a good rivalry, though, because it wasn't vindictive, and there wasn't anything nasty about it. In fact, I never thought anything nasty at all at the depot at the time. I suppose it was there, like. It must have been always there, but if you don't notice it, you don't know it. But the rivalry was to be the best one of the lot, but it was a good rivalry, and I think it did the squads good. It had big competition.
Did the course finish with a passing out parade?
Yes.
Was this quite a big thing?
It was a big thing for the squad, because it meant they went to the battalion or they stayed at the depot for another month. If they didn't pass out, they stayed one more month at the depot, or a fortnight or something like that, whichever the major in charge decided. Depended how bad we were.
Mm-hmm. And the... How many people would be passing out at any one time? Was it just one squad?
One squad. Each squad passed out at a certain time in their training.
On the passing out parade, was just that squad on the parade ground?
Yeah. Oh, no. The other squads would be on it as well. But the major was passing you out. But the other people would be doing their work on the square as well. But they were kept towards the Northumberland end, you know, towards the middle of the square, away from the square. Each squad sergeant, took his squad as far as he could on the square, away from the one that was being promoted. This was automatic between the squad sergeants.
There was no band and bugles for you?
No. No, no. It was simply marching and drill and rifle, exercising rifle, marching, you know, moving your rifle around when you're marching.
The things you'd been learning.
Yes, right. Yes. And the target drill and the weapons, the use and handling of your weapon. That was another thing. There was like three little things you had to do. Yeah.
And as you say, if you passed those, you went on to Catterick, and if you failed, you were put back.
Stuck back a month or a fortnight.
And that failure may have been due just to one man or
yes.
two men.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. That's why we used to have to work as a team and try and help each other, so that everybody didn't get kept back. Mm-hmm.